Hey everybody, welcome back to Radio Imbibe from Imbibe Magazine. I'm Paul Clark, Imbibe's editor-in-chief, and it's Negroni Week. Around the world this week, bars and restaurants are mixing up Negronis and Negroni variations to celebrate the classic cocktail and to raise funds for a great cause. This year marks the 10th anniversary of our first Negroni Week, and to date, the efforts raised more than $3 million for charitable organizations. This year, Negroni Week's giving partner is Slow Food, a global movement of local communities and activists across more than 160 countries seeking to change the world through food and beverage. Slow Food envisions a world where everyone can enjoy food and beverage that's good for them, good for the people who grow it, and good for the planet. To celebrate Negroni Week in this episode, we're revisiting the classic Negroni and breaking it down to its essential components in an effort to better understand this cocktail and to ensure a future of excellent Negronis for all of us. To do this, we're turning to one of the master practitioners of the Negroni, Francesco Lafranconi, an Italian bartender who's long been living in Las Vegas and practicing his craft there, most recently as Vice President of Beverage and Hospitality Culture for Carver Road Hospitality. Francesco Lafranconi, welcome to Radio Imbibe.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, thanks for coming on the podcast, and particularly for our Negroni Week episode of the podcast, because as you all know, Negroni Week is a charity fundraising event that's been going on for a number of years now, centering on the Negroni and its variations. And along the way, not only have we witnessed cocktail drinkers rediscovering the Negroni, but we've seen tremendous creativity on the part of bartenders as they work with this classic cocktail. So for this episode, I wanted to dig into the base formula for the Negroni a little bit and look at it from a few different perspectives, so that we can get to a true heart of the Negroni and really kind of embrace it at its core. So first off, let's talk about the proportions. You know, when we talk about the Negroni, is the equal parts Negroni still the favorite way to do it, or have you seen bartenders adjust that, and why?
Well, I've been experiencing the rise and shine of the Negroni cocktail in the United States since 2000. And I have to say that when you come across some untrained bartenders that they will improvise a recipe, they probably have a tendency to be more gin forward, a little paler version, not the right balance. I can see nowadays, though, that the style can be more of a vermouth heavy to make it a little slightly lighter in terms of alcohol content. But I think that the Holy Trinity, such as the, you know, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, basically, I think it's a perfect combination, one third of each. I think that, you know, the gin and the Campari are always important to be in balance with each other. And then probably the vermouth is the one that can be less or more.
And you mentioned that you've been working with the Negroni for a number of years now. Looking back, you know, 15 or 20 years, how was the Negroni, you know, understood or even frequented? You know, did you see it in a lot of menus? Did a lot of bartenders know how to make it? Were a lot of people ordering it? Because we know it's really changed recently.
Well, Paul, I have to be frank with you. When I first arrived in the U.S., particularly in Las Vegas, the Negroni was considered some sort of an heretic. For sure, it didn't belong to the bar, quote-unquote, everyday drinks dogma. And I had tough times, actually, in the beginning. At times, I was discouraged because, you know, bar managers or bartenders that asked me, hey, where are you from? I'm from Italy. Oh, what do they drink in Italy? Well, Bellinis and Negronis. And, oh, what's Negroni? So, you know, I was making the Negroni. They had very funny faces. They couldn't tolerate that amount of bitterness in the drink, you know, from the Campari. But I'm very glad to see that the American palate actually developed tremendously and now tolerates that more complex and less sweet flavor profile in the cocktail. Although the sugar is still there from the vermouth and the Campari, but not in the fashion of a lemon drop and so forth. So I think major improvements in the average American consumer and the tolerance of this great cocktail that is the Negroni. So right. I'm very happy what the future is bringing.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned just a moment ago, you know, we've looked at the proportions and how there is a tendency for a lot of people, I think, you know, when you look at something like a martini or a Manhattan, where you're using like a 2-to-1 or 4-to-1 for a martini or 5-to-1 for a martini. And then you look in the Negroni where it's equal parts. I think there's a tendency among some people to go, really? You know, that seems, you know, very kind of, I don't know. It seems on paper almost too sweet. But when you really embrace it and you get to understand and seeing those things in balance, it really does work out where each part is playing an essential role. Now, getting into each of those parts and their essential role, let's look at the choice first off of gin in a Negroni. What's your favorite approach for a gin and Negroni, and how would it affect the overall drink if a bartender chooses to go with, you know, for example, a very juniper forward London dry versus a more citrusy or floral or savory gin?
Paul, I'm very traditional when it comes to the gin choice. I think for me, a London dry works very well and it integrates very well with the flavor profile of Campari and vermouth together as well. But I'm kind of a more of a Tanqueray, suits the needs, so to speak. And although I like Oxley and Sipsmith these days, then you have something very juniper forward, like Junipero Gin out of San Francisco, right? It's very gutsy and bold, mm-hmm. but he has his own charm with that very juniper, you know, powerful profile. And then on the other hand, you have more of a softer approach, whether it's like, you know, the Sapphire, Bombay Sapphire of the world where allows, the Campari and the vermouth to pave the way. So you had that wheat grain spirit with the softer extraction of botanicals. And then you go into it, Hendrix and Botanist, you know, and you have that more of that floral, in my opinion. But I think, you know, the floral gin, to me, has to be balanced by the type of vermouth as well. Because when you think about the Negroni, if you have the Campari, which is the core, right? It is absolutely the character, the anchor. Because, of course, there are now other bitter alternatives to the Campari. But, you know, for the most part, that is the one that everybody carries behind the bar. Now, when it comes to gin and vermouth, the botanical formula varies and the intensity of the spirit of the vermouth as well. So I like to work with a London dry. And then if I want to be a little bit more like breezy and lighter style, I go into a floral gin. And then perhaps I go with a lighter style of like a French style vermouth as well, rather than be very bold and opulent, like a Vermouth di Torino, for instance, and with a nice, strong, bold London dry. Right. That's basically my approach.
Right. And, you know, you brought up the matter of vermouth, and I wanted to go into that next. And I think, you know, sometimes vermouth is almost given the short shrift here because we think, well, you know, vermouths are interchangeable, but they're really not, because there's so much character that can be found, especially today when we see the number of vermouths that are available to people that can be used in the cocktail. So let's tease out the vermouth issue a little bit more. What are you looking for with the vermouth in a Negroni? And especially, as you mentioned, as you start considering the type of gin that you're using in there, what are the properties that you're looking for that vermouth?
Well, the vermouth is a very important element, and I think it really can create balance and harmony. Organoleptically speaking, you know, you think of, I give you like two extremes, like Carpano Antica formula versus Dolin, or more of a, so you go into Italian, you know, very, very bold and strong with vanilla forward, and then the more lighter French style of Dolin, and then you go into a nice, rich, and sweeter, opulent Lustau, like Spanish, you know, vermouth for the matter. I think when it comes to Negroni, I like that something like Vermouth Cinzano 1757, Vermouth di Torino, very straightforward. Or also Mancino is a great brand, right? But again, Martelletti. But I think the vermouth should maintain that balance of herbaceous spiciness with aromatic, you know, compounds, but not to be too much of a palate fatigue. If I'm looking at a very basic that it works all the time, like Martini Rossi Classico Rosso, you know, it's a very basic everyday vermouth, but it's very genuine and it allows the gin to come through and it's more of a supportive act. So it depends on the approach. There are, you know, some bartender mixologists that would like to have the vermouth to be more of a, you know, supportive, or someone like the vermouth to be more bold and opulent. And nowadays, with, you know, probably in the US market alone, we have about 200 brands of vermouth. You know, there's so much fun and different complexities and different, you know, so to speak, of conundrums that you can experiment these days. So I think the vermouth is really going to be a deal breaker in the Negroni world going forward.
Right, right. And, you know, I think one of the cool things about the Negroni is all three of the ingredients we're talking about are very botanical forward. You know, they're filled with a number of different botanicals, you know, whether it's the juniper and the citrus peel and the coriander and so on in the gin, the bitter orange and the Campari, the spice notes that you're finding in the vermouth. So there are all of these different kinds of arrays that you can create by adjusting those. You know, your choice of gin and vermouth going into the cocktail. The Campari, as you noted at the outset, is really kind of the star of the show here. And, you know, for people who are unaccustomed to Campari, and I think everybody remembers their first time trying Campari, you know, it's kind of it's an aggressive flavor if you're not accustomed to it, and it takes some getting used to, but it has such that expressive characteristic to it, but it also has all of these beautiful nuanced aspects to it. How do, you know, when you're thinking about your composition for Negroni, how are you selecting your gins and your vermouths to kind of work with the nuances that you can find in the Campari and kind of give those gentle aspects a little nudge forward while also taming down the Campari's, you know, assertiveness?
That's a great question. I think, you know, you have to look at Campari as a very unique, very special start of the show, right? In my opinion, the Campari delivered a very distinctive mouthfeel due to its viscosity, followed by the very lengthy and lingering aftertaste. When you're looking at Campari per se, it's a catalyst, in my opinion, in the cocktail world. And, you know, if you think about it, even when you just said gin, vermouth, and Campari, it's, you know, like a botanical overload combined together. But the Campari, even in the particular case of the Negroni, it remains a catalyst unaffected by the action of other botanicals in the other two ingredients. So it's a very special, unique, you know, ingredient that makes the Negroni to taste what it tastes like. Because as you notice nowadays, there are alternatives to Campari, but Campari delivered that je ne sais quoi in the Negroni than others can't.
Right, right. Absolutely. And, you know, we've been looking at each of the components of it and the construction of it, but we have to talk about the finishing, the serving, the presentation of a Negroni, because, you know, again, you know, there's a traditional way of doing it. There's a way that American bartenders had been accustomed to doing it for a number of years. You see Negroni served on the rocks. You see it served up. What's your preferred format and why, and with the garnish as well?
Well, since I was very young and talking about in the late 70s, early 80s, I was at my parents' bar, a neighborhood bar, and, you know, so my father making the Negroni with, just the two or three ice cubes from the little, bag that you would freeze in the freezer, you know, the ice cubes. And I think even at the tail school, I've been trained to build a Negroni on the rocks, you know, right away. But then I came across also Tony Abuganen when I first moved to Las Vegas in 99-2000. It was spearheading the bar program at Bellagio, you know. And I noticed that he was stirring the Negroni and serving it up in a cocktail glass with orange peel. At that time, even flame orange peel. So I really enjoyed the stir Negroni and then serve over ice. It gives a little bit of that lightness that allows me to actually drink two or three Negroni with confidence because of more dilution. But jokes apart, I really think that to me, the best way to deliver a Negroni, and is always a crowd pleaser among my guests, is when you use block ice, or even if you have a 2x2 ice cubes and you break them in about, you know, two or three pieces, and then you stir the cocktail, and, you know, you start to see this beautiful opalescent shimmer of a red, amber, vibrant colors. But when you sip it from stirring in this very, big chunks of ice, you prevent too much dilution, and it's silky, it's enveloping. It's very, very special. So I suggest everyone who's listening right now to try to use some block ice instead and the regular ice. You will have an incredible experience from a sensory organoleptic experience just by stirring the Negroni and that ice particular. So yeah, that's again, that's my little tip.
Fantastic. So stirring with big ice, that's the way forward. And then serving that on the rocks or serving that up or whatever your preference goes.
So what I do, I take from the mixing glass, I take out with ice tongs the chunks of ice that I've been using for stirring, and I transfer into my rocks glass and I pour over it. So I don't waste that beautiful ice. But in the same time, it's already been primed and coated with the three ingredients. So I'm just reutilizing that beautiful large ice piece.
Right. Okay. Excellent. And as I mentioned at the outset, there's the core Negroni that we've been talking about, but then there are also all of these Negroni variations that have been around from the early days of the Negroni and a lot of creativity that we're seeing from bartenders these days. What are your favorite paths to go with Negroni alternatives, and what are some of the things that you're looking at for this Negroni week?
I do enjoy a mezcal Negroni once in a while. I like the smokiness that is intertwined, with the Campari bittersweet herbaceous taste. But if I had to choose an alternative to a Negroni with gin, I would probably go for a Boulevardier and possibly a 50-50 bourbon and rye together, unless if it's something like Michter's US One Blend, which is already a combination of a bull rye by High West or a few other, but that's kind of what I like. The Sbagliato for me, I do enjoy the Negroni Sbagliato, but I don't think 1 ounce, if you follow the equal parts, of sparkling wine is enough. I would rather stretch it out with at least 3 ounces of sparkling. So it becomes almost an Americano that, takes the soda or the seltzer away and replace it with sparkling wine. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the one that I could drink, from the morning breakfast or the nightcap.
And you're looking at your own approaches to Negroni variations for this Negroni week. Is that right?
Yes, I have a few here at the Carver Steak in Las Vegas. I am going to be featuring 4 great variations of the Negroni. And one of that is also with a slow gin. I'm actually using 4 slow gin with a spice pear by St. George, and I'm adding Martini Rossi Rubino Vermouth. So you have this beautiful kind of walking into the fall type of recipe, and I maintain the 3 equal parts. So slow gin, and I think if I call it right, it's a go with the slow. Mm-hmm. Then another one I'm using with Campari and East India Lustau sherry and rye, using a Michter's rye. Mm-hmm. And then another one I'm also using a little bit of a select, which is a different types of bitter, of mm-hmm. course. And then the Bianco. The Bianco is a great, approach. That it was a drink that I came up when I had a Mr. Coco Lounge in Las Vegas. And that is a combination of, it can be gin. And in this particular case, Paul, I'm using more of a floral gin. I started to this recipe with Aviation, Oregon gin, and some Italicus, Bergamotto Rosolio liqueur, and Luxardo Bitter Bianco. Equal parts, but I add a splash of verjus, unfermented grape juice, just to give a little bit of that acidity and tanginess to it. And then I serve it with the grapefruit and lemon peels and release the oils onto the drink. But a great alternative for that is actually with the sotol that we're using, called Los Magos, and from Chihuahua. So it gives a little bit of the whiffs of smoke, but it's not too penetrating or too smoky. Those are kind of our offering for Negroni Week in Las Vegas.
Well, that's a lot of things to look into this week, and Negroni Week is the perfect time to do that. Francesco, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us and to talk through the Negroni, and happy Negroni Week.
Paul, it's a pleasure, and remember, we're not drinking, we're learning.
Head to NegroniWeek.com to find a participating venue near you and to find recipes for the classic Negroni and a number of great Negroni variations. And that's it for this episode. Subscribe to Radio Imbibe on your favorite podcast app to keep up with future episodes. We've got plenty more recipes and articles for you on our website at imbibemagazine.com. Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, and Facebook for all of your social media needs. And if you're not already a subscriber to the print and or digital issues of Imbibe, then let's change that. Just follow the link in this episode's notes and we'll take care of you. I'm Paul Clark. This is Radio Imbibe. Catch you next time.